Welcome to The Future is Spoken, produced by the Digital Assistant Academy. This show accompanies the Digital Assistant Academy's course entitled Voice Interaction Design. In today's episode of How to Build the Future of Voice, Shyamala Prayaga speaks with Jeff Blankenberg from Amazon about voice-first use cases, error handling, discoverability, and security of the voice assistants, and more. Jeff Blankenberg spent the early part of his career in digital advertising, building websites for Victoria's Secret, Abercrombie & Fitch, and Ford Motor Company, among others. He also spent 8 years at Microsoft, primarily as an evangelist for any new technology he could get his hands on. Today, he works on the Amazon Alexa team, helping developers make Alexa even smarter. Jeff has also spoken at conferences all over the world, including London, Munich, India, Tokyo, Sydney, and New York, covering topics ranging from software development technologies to soft skill techniques. He also serves as an organizer for the Stir Trek conference.
Welcome, Jeff.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. Jeff, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Sure. That's a big, broad question. Like you said, I work at Amazon as an Alexa evangelist, but my background has always been as a software developer. So I got out of school actually with a degree in psychology and thought that was the path I was going to go down before I realized software was really where I wanted to be. And certainly the money convinced me of that too. And so I made the change right after college that I was going to be a software developer. And I've had a pretty fun career so far. I've gotten to work for very big brands at advertising agencies. And I spent a bunch of years at Microsoft before the last four at Amazon. Yeah, that's my quick history.
Wow, you summarized it well. So how did you get into Amazon Alexa, into the voice tech field?
Sure. So it's a funny story, actually. I had left Microsoft and I was working at a startup. And a bunch of the guys that I was talking with had just pre-ordered the very first Amazon Echo when it was first announced. And a guy showed me it and he goes, look at this video, man. This is amazing. And it blew my mind because it was a device that I had come up with an idea for 2 years earlier at Microsoft. And so to see the Echo, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Now, it wasn't my own idea. I had worked with a team of people, but the three of us had basically worked during a summer hackathon, build whatever you want, come up with some cool ideas. And we basically invented the Echo Dot as the thing that we would be cool, but was for Microsoft with Cortana. It didn't go anywhere inside Microsoft, obviously. And then I left Microsoft and went to this startup. And when I saw the device, I was like, this is amazing. I need to find a way to get into that. And so I started going through my LinkedIn and trying to find people that I knew that maybe worked at Amazon or had connections. And a good friend of mine that I had worked with at Microsoft had actually just joined the Alexa team. And I was like, oh my God, this is divine. This is perfect. So I reached out to him and he goes, actually, I was about to call you. We need someone like you on the team. And I was like, it's meant to be. This is how it's going to go. So I had to go through a whole interview. It took about 2 months to really get it all figured out, but that's what got me here.
Wow. Yeah. It was like the opportunity was waiting for you.
It was. But it's an investment, right? This is something I tell people all the time about managing their careers is it didn't just happen that day. This was something that was long running over 9-10 years. The fact that I knew this guy was only because I had done a bunch of work prior to get myself to a point where I was working at Microsoft and we had met, and then he went to Amazon and did something else. And it's just lucky how a lot of this stuff works out. There's definitely a good bit of luck in all of this.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that happening because I've seen many happening in my life.
Yeah.
So yeah, which is good. Jeff, I have a question for you. Like, voice is everywhere now. And ever since Amazon was launched in 2014, there has been a significant hike and hype, both, right? Now people are wanting to voice enable everything. So what does that mean for the future?
I don't even like to think of it necessarily as voice. What I think about is the idea of ambient computing. Computing being around, but not being in front of you. If you think about most of the computing we use today, like I have to pick up my laptop and use it. I have to pick up my tablet and do something with it. The nice thing about voice is it's our first step into the idea of ambient computing, where it's just around me and it's just available when I need it. I mean, I don't have to pull out a device or do any extra things. A good example of that is actually these. This is a pair of Echo Frames, right? I'm not going to wear these the whole time, but if I wear these, this has Alexa built right into them. So I don't have to pull anything out. I don't have to tap anything. But just by wearing a pair of glasses, something like that can make it so that I have the computing power that I need to take whatever task on that I might have. As far as voice goes, there's a number of ways that I like to think about how this might go. The first is I want to be able to walk into Home Depot or any store and be like, where are the hammers? They have probably a greeter there that may know the answer. I could probably find one of their store employees, but I don't want to bother them. I just want to get to the thing I want to get to and go. And it would be amazing, step one, to be able to say, oh, the hammers are in aisle 7. Bigger step two is, hi, Jeff, welcome back. The hammers are in step two, right? That's a much bigger process to all of this. But I think that's where ultimately I hope I see voice, is that when you need to know something, you can speak and get the answer. And whether that's your own mobile device or whether that happens to be devices that are mounted inside stores and venues, imagine going to a casino in Las Vegas that you've never been to before. It's so easy to get lost in those buildings. My wife and I, in fact, have gotten lost in Caesar's Palace before, and we ended up in a weird part of the convention center I didn't know existed. But it's those kinds of things that voice really helps you solve, because you're going to ask a person. I would wager to guess it would be easier and more manageable to be able to ask a device.
That's a great point you mentioned, right? Voice is more of a computing power, or it's giving me the power to do everything, right? Mm-hmm. But then how about, like, you brought up the glasses, which was really nice, which brings me to the next question. Do you think voice should be enabling more and more people? Because, for example, if you look at the glasses example, the assumption is that it is for a person who can speak perfectly, listen perfectly. But then if you look at Echo Show, that is where it starts to get into, you know what, this is where you are able to now see. So you are enabling this device for more and more people. But I see that even the frame or any device would be more helpful to other people who need assistive technologies. So where do you see is that fine balance which needs to be drawn between inclusivity and the computing?
Sure. I think the biggest thing that I see us doing is that we're trying to make this technology available to anyone in any form factor. So we make our own devices like the glasses and the Echo Show, but there are hundreds of other companies out there making lots of interesting devices that use Alexa, but they use it in their own way. And if you've heard of AVS, Alexa Voice Service, it allows you, I've set it up on my own Raspberry Pi. You can put Alexa in anything. I always joke that if you were a toaster manufacturer and you wanted your toaster to be able to respond to voice, it would be surprisingly easy to add Alexa to your toaster. So I think ultimately, when we talk about accessibility, there are people making products that help people access technology in the way that makes the most sense for them. We see things like adaptive controllers for video games. There's all sorts of things that are created. When we think about voice, one of the things that I love about it is that it enables all of the people that have impaired vision. It gives them the opportunity to be able to interact and use this technology. I also saw that just recently in our Alexa app, we made it possible for you to use Alexa by typing. So now we've accommodated the two biggest populations we have, people that can speak and people that can't see. But by being able to type, you could be blind and also unable to speak and still technically be able to use Alexa. That would be a really small niche of people, but by accommodating as many different kinds of disabilities and accommodations as we can, I think it gives this technology a more accessible future than almost anything else, because without your eyes, you can't use most of the technology we have today.
Do you see the use cases being different depending on the form factor? For example, the frames, right? So it may be good for some of the things, where is this aisle or what's in my calendar or some of those things. Right. But as more and more cognitive load is added, for example, let's say the user said, what's in my calendar? Now I have 4 or 5 different things and like coming up next. So everything is being spoken and people have some level of like acceptance or whatever you say, like they cannot hear the robotic voice for a very long time. There's a limit. How do you think about those kind of things when designing for different form factors and designing for those interactions?
Sure. So one of the rules that I use is something that I call the one breath test. And the general idea is if the content that you're going to provide to the user can't be spoken by a human in one breath, in a reasonable breath, right? Not trying to force every possible word out, then you need to find a way to summarize it. One of the examples I use for this is imagine you had a fruit stand and you were selling fruits, but you were doing it only via voice. Someone walks up and you say, oh, we have bananas, apples, blackberries, raspberries, you go on and on with a list of fruits. And then you say, which one do you want? First, you gave them a whole long list of things and you didn't tell them you were going to make them pick. You were just explaining something to them. And now they're caught off guard. It's like when you're only paying half attention in a meeting and then someone says, Jeff, what do you think about that? And you're like, oh, what? I don't know. I don't have my opinion. But the way that I like to shorten things like that example, the fruit stand example up, is instead you could say, if you know anything about the customer, you could say, previously you've ordered bananas, apples, and oranges. Do you want one of those or do you want something else? And give the user the opportunity to freeform their way into things. You can always say, I'm sorry, we don't have star fruit, if that's the thing that they ask for. But if they say watermelon, you can be like, oh, okay, our watermelons are $3.99 each or whatever it might be. I think it's our tendency as software developers to present users with a list of content. But I think that we're far better equipped with voice to allow the user to just say what they want and let them do it their way. And then refine that back to what we really want, rather than trying to present them with, here's the 17 things you have coming up today. The way I would summarize the example you gave me is you have, looking at your calendar, you have a meeting at 1, 2, 5, and 7. Which one do you want to know about? Or I might start with, your next meeting is with Morgan at 2 o'clock, but you also have meetings at 3, 5, and 7. What else can I help you with? And they can say, tell me about the 5 o'clock one. Let them dive in and choose. Because we just don't have the luxury of a rich screen with a whole bunch of data on it that people can consume. So that I think that would be my perspective on that.
So it's all about strategies depending on like how the user can or may interact to make it more conversational. I like that. And I think that is really where we are missing right now. We are very transactional when it comes to conversations with any of these voice assistants. And I feel like, yeah, what you mentioned would be really awesome as technology evolves and matures. Maybe that's where we can be. How about contextual design? Like when you're thinking about all of these things, there is a context where I'll be using. For example, I don't see myself wearing the glass all the time at home and just walking around. I have an Alexa and it's just next to me. Right. But then I mute it because of multiple reasons. Like it just initiates, or when every time I'm talking and Alexa comes up, she'll be speaking out. There are those kind of things. So how do you make sure to think about contextual design and all of these things?
I think as we're starting to build experiences, that needs to be your first step. It's very, as a developer, I am prone to want to build and make it work first. But I think that's often a mistake. I think that you need to be able to take that step back. You need to be able to say, what are the paths that I expect my user to take through this experience? And make sure that you have those in a nice structured way. Conversational design is a great way to think about this. What are the main things that my user is going to want to do? Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going to head down path A and then find their way over to path B or C some way along the line. But at least we know what our core experiences are and we can define those pretty easily. You have to do these kinds of things first. And I recommend to people as I talk about building for voice, that one of the core things you should do is sit down and talk to humans first. Don't write any documentation. Don't draw flow charts. Don't do any of that stuff. Sit down and say, okay, I'm your bank. Talk to me. What do you want to do? And listen and write down everything they say and the words they use and the approach that they take to solve problems. Many people will follow a model that you see like in your mobile app. Oh, I want to open my checking account. Okay, why? I want to be able to transfer money from this account to another account. Okay, why didn't you just say that? Why did we have to go to the first bank account? That's the nature of thinking about it like the web or mobile. When realistically, I should just be able to say, I want to transfer money from my checking to my savings account. Okay, done. That should be the end of the experience. But we as developers and certainly technologists tend to think in a way that we've seen before. And I think voice is vastly different from that. I've gone on a tangent there, but I think that answered your question.
Definitely. Yeah. So it's interesting. You mentioned voice is vast. So unlike the GUI experiences or touchscreen experiences, like you mentioned, where it's very straightforward, there are like A, B, C, or D. There are like 4 different options which can happen. But voice is so natural and open-ended, anything could happen. Someone could, I keep bringing this up, like my son, if you ask him, hi, how are you? He'll be like, fine. That's right. It. He kills the conversation. So now how do you continue the conversation with him? So there may be people like that who give very less information. And there may be people who's giving too much information at once.
Right.
So thinking about those kind of things is also important.
It is.
But when we are doing those things, you mentioned user-centered approach, which is nice, bringing the user or talking to them and understanding how they would be saying. Sometimes it may be possible you miss some of the use cases, right?
Of course.
How do you ensure everything is being tested out?
There's a couple of ways that I go about that. So the first step is, from a code perspective, I rely pretty heavily on unit tests. Mm-hmm. So I make sure that everything can do what it's supposed to do and run through that. But that's more the code side. As we think about the voice side, one of the key things that I use, there's a tool actually built into the Alexa Developer Console, which allows me to basically predefine a bunch of utterances that I want to be able to test against. And I can provide what I expect the outcomes of those things to be. And so by building out those kinds of voice tests to say, when I say banana, it should say this, or it should respond with this, and it should recognize banana as a slot value, and I should hit this intent and those kinds of things. By being able to define not only a starting position, but also an outcome, and then validating that against your skill, that's a really valuable tool in being able to set to build all these tests first as part of your research, as part of your user design, and then you start building intents, and then you start building your code to make all of those tests pass. And you should, if you have a robust enough set of tests, you should know when you're done with the skill because all the tests will pass.
That's cool. Yeah. So that brings me to another question, which I did not plan to ask you. But right. Yeah. When we talk about the entire intent mapping and all of those things in a conversation design, there are a lot of things as well, right? The users can ask all sorts of things. For example, weather is a very straightforward one. What is the weather? Do I need an umbrella? Or will it rain today? And depending on the region and depending on the local slangs and all, people may ask in different variants, right? How do you even collect those utterances in first place to put it into a system?
That's a great question. So one of the ways that I do that is through beta testing. I will often build some additional functionality into my skill for beta testing that captures the things that didn't match anything else as best that I can. That helps me as an independent person be able to get a bunch of feedback from people. But again, going back to humans, going back to working with really real people, I would recommend asking your family to use your skill and watch and listen. I would recommend your colleagues and your friends to do the same. But when you start to move across different languages, it becomes trickier. My recommendation would be find someone that can speak that language natively and ask them to fill in the holes for you, because that's a nearly impossible task. I would almost never recommend using something like Google Translate to try to solve this problem for you, because it's not the same. Oh, yeah. If you want to prove that to yourself, go type a paragraph of text into Google Translate and translate it to some language you don't know, and then copy the output and translate that back to English. And you'll see just how far off you are. It won't sound natural to the people that are naturally speaking that language. As I would imagine, if I tried to fumble my way through your native language, I'm sure I would have a very difficult time with it.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that happening. So this is for the utterance standpoint, right? How about the responses? So now, are you talking about having translators in place who's going to translate for each and every language? Or are you talking about maybe a different conversation designer for each region? Because now there are two different things, right? One thing is that there's a personality to Alexa, and even other voice assistants do have a personality. So when an utterance is being said, it will respond back. So let's say, for example, if you said, Alexa, good night, she would say, good night, don't let the bed bugs bite you, for example. So now this may sound very cool in an English language. And as the same thing is true translated into some other language, maybe it may not make sense at all. Are we saying that we need different conversational designers for each language?
I don't know that you need different conversational designers, but I think you definitely need someone that is knowledgeable and fluent of the language. So I actually solve this problem a couple different ways in some skills that I've built, where I have a database. So let me take a step back. One of the things that I always recommend, even if you're only building a skill for one language, is the idea that everything, every utterance that your skill produces, you should probably have 5 to 7 different versions of that utterance. You might say good night, don't let the bed bugs bite one time, but you might also say good night, make sure to look at the moon, or just something else. And all of those are different, and they're unique in a way that forces your user to listen. When they don't hear the same thing every single time, they tend to pay more attention. So the first thing that I solved for my skills was I want to create some randomization, some variation in how things are said, because there's so many different ways to say the same thing. Then I took that a step further and I said, okay, if I want to be able to internationalize this skill, if I want to localize it to Japan or India or Germany or wherever, then I need that same thing duplicated across all of these other languages. And so as I structured my database, I had the ability to insert not only different strings for different purposes, but also different languages. And so my goal was, before I would launch in Japan, as an example, I have some contacts in Japan. I would reach out to them and I would say, they know English well enough. I would provide them my list and say, I need an equivalent number of things for all of these different topics. So they don't necessarily need to worry about the conversation design or be very fluent in voice development. But what they do need to be able to do is understand the purpose of what the message is saying and create a, not a translated version necessarily, because like bedbugs doesn't really translate, but to be able to create different versions. I'm sure there are good night kind of sayings in Japanese the same way there are in English, but they're vastly different. And so being able to write those and understand, oh, I just need to be able to say goodbye here, or, oh, I need to be able to help someone with this problem here. That's the approach that I generally take. But yeah, it is not something that I think that one person can do.
So in the entire translation, is the meaning lost at some point? For example, there's a personality to Alexa, right? So sure. When the same thing is being translated by anyone, like any translator or any person who knows that language well, have you seen like the personality being lost?
Not necessarily. I don't know that I have a broad enough experience with this to really get that kind of feedback though. So my experience has been that it works. It's sufficient. People can use the skill. But I would bet the English version that I created originally was probably more fun or more engaging than maybe the translated versions were. But I don't have the data for that, unfortunately, to say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I was heading. Maybe sometimes it may turn out to be less funner as right. compared to like the original version. And maybe being able to translate that personality would make more sense.
Yep.
One question I had on the skill side. Amazon has been there for a while now, and there are almost 100,000+ skills, right?
Yeah.
Some of those skills are third-party skills, some are internal skills or custom skills, right? But if you look at the data, there are only few skills which are used the most, and the other skills are not as much. So where do you see the gap? Is it like in the skill building itself?
Sure.
Or is there a problem with how this entire app store works?
I think there's a number of things. I think that we as Amazon have done a fantastic job of letting people know the core use cases for their devices. But those core use cases were built by us, are managed by us, are delivered by us. And when you think about all of the other things that are out there, like you said, there's over 100,000 different experiences.
Right.
I often think people don't always know they even, like that store exists. And I don't know if that's anyone specific fault. I think that's just something that has happened as we've gone through this. Part of it is the fact that we don't have screens to bubble up information to users, right? We do on the Echo Show devices and we do tell them about skills. But when people were just using the original Echo and the Echo Dot and stuff like that, they learned what they know. And one of the natural tendencies of humans when they use a new device is they know what they can do and they're very hesitant to venture out. I don't want to screw something up, or that's the mentality a lot of people have with newer technology, especially if they're not well-versed or deep in that technology. And so when I think about the store and the visibility that some of these skills get, I think it's something that is getting much, much better. Mm-hmm. And the primary reason for that is an initiative we came up with called Name-Free Invocation. The idea behind this is that people might say her name, I'll try not to say the name a lot, but they talk to their device and they say, you know, who was the first person to climb Mount Everest? That might not actually be something Alexa knows. Maybe she doesn't know the answer to that question, but she knows that there are skills that do know that. There's a bunch of very interesting fact skills that serve a number of purposes. And she may actually be handing that experience off to a skill, but the user may not actually be aware of that. So we're seeing more and more, if someone were to say, I need a ride, they will look and say, oh, you have the Uber skill enabled. So we're actually going to just kick open the Uber skill and let them get you a ride because that's what you need. Even though they never said Uber or any of the words that would normally trigger that skill to open. So I think that name-free invocation is going to be really core to how these skills are discovered in the future. And then we need to do more encouragement of our users to just try and say things. Because I think they'd be surprised the number of experiences and games and entertainment and things that they could be doing but they just don't know they're there.
So discoverability is a bigger problem, you're saying.
I think universally, that's a problem. It's not even just an Alexa thing. Think of all the, and this may be true even for your mobile phone, right? There are so many apps in the Google and Apple app stores that there's no possible way anybody that just wants to put something out there can really be found. They're going to have to spend a fortune in marketing and advertising to be able to get themselves out there, to get themselves visible. And that's before or after their game is actually any good. So I think discoverability in general is a problem because there's just so much. But with voice, I think it's harder because you don't have things in front of you. I don't have any data on this, but I don't think most people are just perusing the app store for Alexa skills, trying to find the next thing they want to use. More than likely, they're just talking to their device and, oh, I wonder if it'll do this. And they try something. So discoverability is very different on Alexa than it is in a mobile app store or even a PC app store.
Yeah, that's true. So do you see like in future conversation design could become something modern, for example, through which people will try to enable discoverability, like people are talking about voice commerce?
Yes and no. I think that the way that we're approaching it is that we don't want developers to have to do any extra work. And we certainly don't want it to be something like a search engine where there's optimization and games people can play to try to get to the top of ranks. I think what they're trying to do is build an AI engine that can it can automatically figure out what does this skill do? What value can it provide to our customers? And then funnel those to the top when those kinds of requests are made.
Yeah. I think that's all like good initiatives for sure. Yeah. And it would help a lot of people. I really love the invocation free because I do feel that's a big problem, especially because that's not natural way of like for people to say something. Right. No one would say, Alexa, tell Ford to start my car or something like that in real world. So which is good. I'm really looking forward to that feature for sure. Now, throughout the voice experience, there are lots and lots of things which can happen. There were slots missing, or there were some errors which happened, or there could be anything, right? Where like there could be disambiguation where the user said something and there are multiple results or the assistant is not sure which one to actually say. So how do you design or handle those like unexpected things gracefully?
There's a couple of ways that I approach this. The first is I rely on the built-in dialogue management to solve some of these problems for me. So with dialogue management, I can say, let's use as an example that I want to, I'll use a real example. I'm building a voice-based casino right now. Now it's not real money, but you can play all the casino games. Mm-hmm. And if you say, I want to play video poker, that's great, but that's not enough information. How much are you betting? Are you betting 5 coins, 10 coins? What is the wager that you want to make on that? And so I'm using the built-in dialogue management to handle that for me. If you say you want to play video poker, but you haven't given me an amount, then I push back and say, okay, how much do you want to wager on video poker? That happens automatically. I don't have to write any code for that. That's built right into the dialogue management tools. The same goes for roulette. I need 2 pieces of information for you there. The first one is where do you want to put your bet on the roulette wheel? Which numbers do you want? And 2 is how much do you want to bet? So with that, if you don't give me one or the other, then I have to push back and I use dialogue management to handle those. But there are other situations where I have a skill that is a baseball skill. It lets me know how many games back from first place your baseball team is. And so if you're 3 games back, that's the thing that you want to know. Oh, I'm 3 games back from first place. Okay, they need to win this weekend. That's a good piece of information for me. But what if you say the name of it, something that isn't a baseball team? You haven't really given me nothing. You've just given me something I don't want or don't know what to do with. In those cases, what I tend to do is pair it back to my user. Parrot like the bird. I like to say, oh, you said hot dogs, but that's not the name of a baseball team. Please give me the name of a baseball team if you'd like to know more about one. And by being able to take the information they said and hand it back to them, it solves 2 problems. One, for the people that are just messing around, it's just redirecting them to the place that they should be. But for people that might have said something slightly wrong, it lets them hear what they said wrong because we can catch that word, pass it back to them and say, oh, I heard you say hot dogs. And they're like, no, I said Yankees, right? Like that makes a difference for them. Mm. They can then reprompt back to the device and say, no, this is what I meant, and continue on. So those are the 2 ways that I generally handle this. If I'm getting nothing, which happens sometimes, where they give me half of an entry or they say they want a pizza, but they didn't give me any toppings or whatever. Like, dialogue management can handle a lot of that for me. But when they're giving you information that you don't know how to handle, it's always in your best interest to try to catch that and repeat it back to them and say, that's not something I was expecting. What do you want me to do with this information?
Yeah. Definitely, I feel like those are really like important things. Now, this happens all the time, and this annoys me sometimes. So I have my voice assistant in the car. It's a different brand, not Ford. But then what it does is I have too many moms in my contact list because I have a 9-year-old. So for playdates and all, I have like Jason's mom, Jeff's mom, and Logan's mom, everyone's mom. And then I have my own mom, saved as mom. So now if I said call mom, it would not understand. So what it does all the time is it shows me like, okay, I found these many results. Tell me which one do you want? And sometimes it's easy to assume. And I always had like this back and forth conversation with the development team about like, why can't it just understand like this is the person I always call. So maybe this is what who I want to call. And the person was like, what, this one time you didn't want it to call your mom. Maybe you wanted to call someone else. And this time the system messed up because people do have a very limited, I would say, patience when it comes to like interactions with voice assistants. And if they go wrong, people yell. Where do you see like this fitting into graceful handling of situations?
I think the first time it's challenging. There's not a lot you can do the first time that this happens. But this is where context becomes a big part of what's going on in voice. And so if you think about the first time I say mom and you're like, oh my gosh, they have 5 moms in their list. Here they are. I should be paying attention to the fact that you picked one. Like you picked one that you said mom originally. I gave you a list and you picked one. I should be pairing those together. I should be matching those and storing additional metadata that says, when she says mom, she means this one. And until that becomes not true, until you break that rule, that should be the case. Now, if you break the rule or you say, call Jason's mom is technically an entirely different entity than mom. And so it should be able to understand that those things are different. But I think that is a limitation. I see this especially on cars that built their own voice assistants. I like Ford Sync is a good example. Those kinds of tools are fine, but they're not where things like Alexa are. Can do so much more, that have so much more. And they're limited by a number of factors, which is okay. I'm not blaming them at all. But I think that when we think about users and their context, there needs to be this awareness about what's actually going on. And when you hit that wall, right? You hit the mom wall. We just coined that. So you hit that mom wall and you're presented with choices. This should always be a trigger to say, okay, we need to do something important here. We're mapping things. And we announced some stuff earlier this summer where you can start to tell your device, like your device, when I say this, I want you to do this thing. Starting to train it to use the phrases and words that you want to use to make things happen. I think the one example, one of our vice presidents from Alexa Science, his name's Rohit Prasad, he created a situation where he wanted a very specific scene in his office. He wanted the lights to dim. He wanted the temperature to drop. He had a couple of other things that happened as well. And he goes, when I say set it to Rohit scene, I want this thing to happen. And he just did it with his voice. He didn't have to open the app, build routines, do any of that stuff. That's the same kind of thing where we're trying to train the device. When I say these things, do these things. And we don't want it to be that kind of command and control system. You should be able to say what you want when you want, but it should also start to recognize, oh, I'm seeing a pattern here. And that's where I think a lot of the earlier voice assistants start to fall down, is they don't have any of that smarts. They're just executing the same path every single time.
Yeah, that kind of happens. And where does, in this entire thing, the confidence level of the voice assistant like falls in place? Because technically, it's all the understanding, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the system partially recognized mom and not like, maybe I said Jason's mom, but it partially recognized because there was background noise or something else happening.
Sure.
Do you still feel in those situations also, like having similar kind of strategies would make sense, like the context, understand the context in first place, and what the user has been doing?
Yeah, I think I still stick with that. I think that even in the interrupted sound, generally, if you have some background noise and some words, that still registers as different than just the word. Oftentimes, it might interpret it for the wrong word. So it might be like Bezos's mom or something like that, even though you said Jason, but it heard it wrong. I think those kinds of things are natural, but what I would expect you would probably end up with the wrong word, not no word, if that makes sense. Yeah, I still think that's the right approach. It needs to be smart enough to recognize patterns, but smarter enough to be able to recognize when patterns are being broken. So that we're not just locking in rules and saying, oh, this is the thing I always do. It needs to be adaptive, and it needs to say, this is the highest probability match. And you can do that very easily. I have a number of things. I use a technology called Dynamic Entities within my skills. Mm-hmm. I have one that's a Star Wars database, right? So you can ask about any character or planet or vehicle or whatever. So you can imagine there's a number of Skywalkers that you might want to ask about in this skill. And if I only hear the word Skywalker, I don't really know which one you want. But if I then clarify and I look in my database and I say, did you mean Luke or Anakin or Shmi or whatever? Now you can clarify. You can say, oh, I want you say their first name or you say their whole name. Now I've got it nailed down. If it was something that was more important than just Star Wars data, it would be very easy for me to say, oh, it seems like every time they say Skywalker, they mean Luke. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to just give them Luke until they say, no, I wanted Shmi. And then I should recognize that those changes happen differently. And once they break the rule, then we back off a little bit and we go back to presenting them a list again. But I think those kinds of little dynamic moves aren't hard to build and are something that most people skip over.
These are all great points, which you are saying, right? Some of these things are strategic, right? Like these are some strategies which we have to follow. Or some of these things are built into the system. Like right. The dialogue management has some of these things and maybe Alexa Voice Services has some of these things. But these kind of informations are not available out there a lot when it comes to for a designer or a developer to start thinking about like the solutions.
Sure.
So what would you suggest? Like how should one go about knowing these kind of things?
At the end of the day, what we're really talking about is conversation. We're talking about talking between two people. Mm-hmm. What I would expect in almost all cases is think about how you would handle that situation. You and I are talking and I happen to say that I'm going to be meeting up with Jason's mom next week. But as we're talking, a bus drives by and you don't hear the Jason part. What are you going to say? I would guess from your side, you're going to say, I'm sorry, whose mom did you say? You're going to clarify with me. Was it Jason? I could see your lips. Was it Jason's mom? Was it Chris's mom? Whose mom are you meeting with? That kind of clarification happens in natural human speech all the time. And I think the more that we can model after human speech, the better off we're going to be. I think the keys are to be able to be aware of the fact that like you could be interrupted or there could be background noise or you might not hear the answer. Another thing that I'm really pushing hard for developers to consider is the idea of the built-in Amazon repeat intent. Hmm. This is something that I don't see a lot of people use either. And there's so many times where you're talking to a skill and then you get distracted or the TV's on or the dog barks. And before you know it, you didn't hear what they said, what they asked you. And because people aren't taking advantage of the repeat intent, they don't have a way to hear it again. But if you use that, and then you could say, I'm sorry, what was that? Or can you repeat that? Those kinds of things naturally become part of the conversation like we would as humans. Because there are times where we just don't hear the person. Mm-hmm. So I think there isn't a great answer for me to say, oh, just go here and read this document or read this book and you'll have all your problems solved. But I think if you rely on your knowledge of human conversation, I think that you will have 95% or better success.
And how about testing? Do you feel like testing could be a good way of getting to know some of these things as well? Because yeah, conversations are great and we do that all the time. But then we do miss on some of those things when we are actually implementing it on the application side of things.
Sure, agreed. There's always going to be gaps. And I think it's really hard to assess the entire ecosystem because so much varies between every single individual application. But I think when we talk about testing, I can't encourage it enough. When we think about getting our application into the hands of other users, you should be doing that early and often. As much as you can possibly let people use your stuff and get feedback and watch them use it. Ideally, without them letting you see you watch them. Those kinds of scenarios make a huge difference because as you build it the way you think, you build it the way you speak, and that's not how everybody else speaks. If we were to ask everybody that's watching to say, how would you ask me for the weather? We'll find 15 varieties. And if we're not prepared for those kinds of varieties, our skill's going to fall down for some of those people. So getting it into the hands of a 50, 100 people will make a huge difference, almost a necessary difference in how good your skill is.
Yeah, testing definitely, I feel, is really important. How often do you suggest and how early?
It depends on how you build, but you can build it in modules and publish your skill to your beta users in modules. So you can say, right now, the only thing it does is the help system. So going to help, give them some basic scripts, but don't tell them what to say. Just tell them how to try to get there. But you could realistically start very early in the process and then just have a weekly cadence to say, here's the new stuff we added. Here's the new stuff we added, and let them try that new stuff as it comes out. And they will naturally try to go back to the things they've tried. They will naturally try to go back and touch on things and join things together. Earlier, I could only do this one pizza ordering process, but now they have the whole menu implemented. So let me try and get a pizza and some breadsticks, and let's see how that all works together. I would also recommend, when you think about building conversations, think about how humans work, or think about how you do phone systems. I like to use the pizza system as an example because it's really broad and there's a lot of touch points on it. But imagine you were calling a pizza shop and, or no, let's take that back. You're on your phone and you're ordering through their app and you get your pizza and your breadsticks into the shopping cart in the app. And you see the total and you realize, oh, they're going to charge me $3 to deliver it. And then I have to tip the person. And I can't use the coupon that I got in the newspaper because it's in the app. This just became a $25 order. If I just go get it, it's 15 bucks. What's the number for the store? When you're in their checkout, you don't have access to any of that information. And you should fully expect that your users might do that with voice too. They start through the process and they realize, I don't want to do it this way, or this isn't working for me, or never mind, I'm just going to go to the store. What's the address of the store? What's your store hours, right? Your skill needs to be able to handle those things naturally, but also take the user back to where they were, so that if they're in the middle of ordering a pizza and they say, what is your store hours? You should be able to say, oh, our store, we're open till 9 tonight. Do you want to go back to your pizza? Like, it should contextually know, hey, you were doing a thing. So I think those kinds of things will solve those problems too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I can see, as we start to think about the future of voice, definitely these kind of things will help a lot, especially with the interactions and the design and all of those things. How about analytics? We keep talking about this thing, and Amazon is a data-driven company, right? So analytics is the heart and soul of everything you guys do.
It is. When I think about analytics, it's not necessarily something you can use a ton to drive your initial launch. Mm-hmm. You have to have some good vision about what your customers want and how it works. But once it's launched, there's so much to be learned there, because you will have ideas about the areas of your skill or your application that you want to expand on, that you want to grow. But as you look at your initial few weeks of usage, you may realize nobody cares about that thing. And there's no reason to invest more in that specific feature when, in fact, they really care about these three other things that we hadn't anticipated being big at all. So I think that makes a big difference. Now, for something like a pizza shop, I think your core order system is probably a good guess. But being able to find locations may not be something they put in there initially, and they're finding that lots of people are asking, what's the store address, or what's the office hours, or whatever. You have to use analytics for a number of things. One of them that I use it for is to recognize slot values that I wasn't anticipating, so that I can handle those better in the future. So if I have a menu and somebody orders asparagus, if asparagus isn't something that we offer, I could go in, create a slot value for that and say something very unique or funny or something about asparagus directly, so that anytime anyone asks about asparagus in the future, I can say, that's actually not on our menu. It tastes gross. Sorry. Or, whatever it happens to be. But I think those kinds of things make a big difference in your skill. Being able to recognize what's being said that you're not handling and what's being used the most should drive most of your decisions once you're there.
Do you also see this being used to enhance the discoverability as well? So for example, I may have 4 or 5 skills which I have enabled, but maybe I just enabled it one day because I was playing with my phone and I was like, oh, this is cool, but I never used it, to maybe prompt me or nudge me to use those.
I think as part of the Amazon suggestion system, every once in a while you'll hear a, by the way, or something like that. I think it is driven from some of those things. They tend to recommend things that you have used before, or things that are at least available to you. But once in a while, you'll get something that's completely new and different as well.
And so that is not of the analytics, but it is something random out of the skills or something.
It is. I'm sure it's somewhat based on usage, but it's not something that you can necessarily see or control.
Interesting. Yeah. That's true. And I think that's how you constantly improve the system. Like, you have to balance it out, not just ask them to use the ones they've enabled but not used, but how do you then ask them to use the new ones which are out there?
Exactly. So, yeah, I agree. And it definitely is a challenge. Getting people to discover skills is hard. And we're continuing to work on new innovative ways to solve those problems. But it's something that we're seeing grow. We're seeing more people use more skills. And that gives us a lot of optimism.
Yeah, perfect. So one last question I had on the responses side was, earlier you were mentioning that when you design your skill, you are thinking about different variations of how to say the same thing. For example, mm-hmm. there are 4 or 5 variations for good night.
Right.
So why do you think it is important to have variations when designing voice prompts?
That is a great question that I hope I have a good answer for. So the example I'd like to use is, imagine when we worked in offices, you would walk in and you probably had someone sit in the cube next to you or the desk next to you, and you would say, "Hey, good morning." And if George every morning was like, "Hey, how are you?" And that was it. That's the whole conversation every time. It becomes mundane and boring. And you start to not want to talk to George because he's boring. There's nothing interesting or exciting about what's going on with him. And we have the same problem with voice experiences on our assistants. When we talk to them, if it's predictable, it's boring. And you remember consistently that you're talking to a robot. Mm-hmm. That's not the experience you want your users to have. So when you force them to listen, when you force them to pay attention to what you're saying, because they're hearing different things, when they can't anticipate what's coming, they have to pay attention, which drives engagement. Because if they're paying attention, they're going to continue to participate. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that you're really driving towards at the end. So I randomize all of my speech, because it forces you to listen and pay attention and engage in the same way that when meetings are boring and you tune out because I've heard all this, all that, I'm not paying any attention, and you get called on and it's that huge surprise. You don't want that stuff to happen to your users. You want them to be engaged and paying attention to do the task and accomplish it as easily as they possibly can. So that being said, it forces them to pay attention. And I even recommend taking it a step further. It's not just the randomization of speech. It's also the randomization of the order in which they experience things. Mm-hmm. There's no reason, there's no rhyme to how this stuff has to work. And so the example I use is a travel agent. Imagine you are talking to a travel agent skill and you want to be able to book a flight. They could ask you where you're flying from and where you're flying to and what day you want to leave and what day you want to return. But they could do that in any order. So don't create a situation in which you ask the same things in the same order every time, because people start to tune out. So my recommendation always is mix it up, change it up as much as you possibly can. Give them something so they're like, wait, they said, where am I flying from? Oh, Ohio, or whatever the answer happens to be. That makes a big difference in how they're paying attention versus they're just waiting for Alexa to stop speaking so they can give the next answer.
Yeah. Definitely. I like the approach, not just the responses, but also the steps of getting the information can be randomized, which is really nice. Yeah. And I think, yeah, it would keep that freshness and people would enjoy the conversation for sure, like you mentioned, which is important. So any last thoughts or anything you want to talk about before we wrap up?
Nothing specific. We're heading into the holiday season. Lots and lots of people are going to have a little bit of downtime, maybe a lot of downtime. I know you and I talked before this about having a few days off. I would recommend everybody explore building something. And then the thing I'd love the most is if they told me about it. I want to hear about what people are building. That's part of my job, is to hear from developers, get their feedback, think what they think, what they like, what they don't like. And so my name is Jeff Blankenberg. That is my username literally everywhere. I live stream on Twitch. I'm on Twitter all the time. I would love for people to reach out to me and let me know what they're thinking about, what they're building, what they're doing. And if there's anything I can do to help them, how I can support them.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is great. I'll make sure to add this thing as well, so you get all the feedback and all the apps. For sure, our students will have a lot of questions for you.
Sure.
For sure. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much, Dave. It was a pleasure talking with you today.
It was nice to meet you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. If you would like to post a voice comment, please go to www.witlingo.com/DAA. That's www.witlingo.com/DAA. We'd love to hear from you. Remember, you can find all the information on how to become a certified voice interaction designer, along with show notes and more, at our website, digitalassistant.academy. That's digitalassistant.academy. We encourage your feedback and questions, so be sure to get in touch by using the contact page at the Digital Assistant Academy's website. We'll include the link in the show notes. In our next episode, Obaid Ahmed from BotMock talks about building conversation design teams within an organization. Until next week, take care.